You are listening to Particular Pilgrims, Stories from Reformed Baptist History with Commentary. I'm your host, Ron Miller, pastor of Covenant Baptist Church of Clarksville, Tennessee, and a longtime student and collector of Particular Baptist History. We are on the Man of God Network, brought to you by Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary. William Stedman arrived in Plymouth on June 6, 1798, as a pastoral partner to Isaiah Burt. This left the Broughton Church without a pastor, a situation that was to continue for 11 years. But in God's strange providence, the church finally began to grow during this time. The surrounding Baptist pastors cared for the church until 1809, when a graduate of the Bristol Academy named Hugh Russell was called as pastor. This is a good reminder that God's church is built not by men, not even by good, qualified, zealous, and called men, but by Christ, and that he uses whatever means and whatever timing he thinks best. You will recall that Isaiah Burt was a popular preacher, much in demand both at home and afar. The church at Plymouth Dock, then called Liberty Street Baptist Church, was growing. While Stedman was visiting as a candidate, another church building was offered to Liberty Street, and they decided to purchase it. It was named Morris Square. This meant that the overflowing attendance could be divided between the two locations. So when the two men were in pastoral harness together, they alternated preaching each week at the two chapels. Stedman continued to itinerant in the surrounding villages, but less frequently because of the pressing demands of the larger congregation. And in the new church, that almost immediately the Lord saved several hearers, which greatly encouraged him. There had been fruit in Broughton, but it was very hard earned. In Plymouth, the head of the church granted conversions quickly, and by the next year, 1799, it became clear to both pastors that two distinct churches should be formed. Additions to the membership would support two bodies, so they began to cut back on their exchange of locations and gradually moved toward forming separate congregations by the end of the year. Stedman took the lead at Liberty Street and Burt at Morris Square. There were now three Particular Baptist churches in the bustling port of Plymouth. This doesn't appear to have been due to significant tensions between the men, but rather the concern that they were becoming too large and dispersed to keep up proper discipline. Some of Stedman's thinking through the issues involved is recorded, and could profit pastors in larger churches, considering multiple sites or church planting. One of the means Stedman used to revive himself when feeling dull in spiritual things was to read the memoir of Samuel Pierce, written by Andrew Fuller. Stedman's dear friend had died in 1799, only 33 years old. You will recall they were close in school. They had also regularly corresponded in their pastorates and even considered going to India as missionaries together. But both concluded this was not the right path for them. Instead, they strongly supported the Baptist Missionary Society with their preaching and in raising funds. There was at this time in Plymouth a well-known Anglican hyper-Calvinist named Robert Hawker. He was a tremendous preacher and one of the most popular of the time in the entire country. He preached Christ well, often, and with success. But he also strongly denied the free offer of the gospel and said that it was a direct contradiction to Scripture to invite all to Christ. Instead, only the poor and thirsty of Isaiah 55:1 were to be called. Hawker was also accused of antinomian tendencies. Stedman had pastoral concerns about all of this, of course, But his response to Hawker is a balanced and commendable one, worthy of our close consideration. Stedman recognized that some who were tinged with hyper-Calvinistic errors were genuine Christians, while others who held to them were not. In his mind, there was a difference between being a true believer with errors and a wicked person who used these things as an excuse to cloak their sin because of love for the world. So when called to counsel people caught up in this, he distinguished between the pious who were struggling with ideas about election, duty, faith, and obedience, and the impious who excused their sinful lifestyle. Of course, he was a deeply committed man to the law of God as the rule of life for the Christian, and freely offered Christ to all. He not only taught this and corresponded with those who disagreed about this, but he lived it out. His practice of evangelistic preaching, both in the church and out, and his holy life matched his doctrine. And these differences didn't stop him from befriending Robert Hawker and always speaking well of him. His son relates that his father regularly told a story that reflected highly on the man. Two dissenting ministers had a disagreement, and Hawker heard of it. So he called both men together and worked with them until a full reconciliation was reached. Stedman knew that if we are required to love our enemies, surely we must love those who love Christ, even if with a different understanding of some significant things. During his time in Plymouth, Stedman was also able to give himself more diligently to study. This helped him in his pastoral duties, but also helped to prepare him for the next stage of his pastoral life. You may recall in our study of John Fawcett that he taught a school to partially support himself and to help prepare men for the ministry. His best-known students in this regard are John Sutcliffe and William Ward. He had been asked to head up the Bristol Baptist Academy, but declined. He was firmly convinced, though, of the need for ministerial education, especially in northern England where he lived. When Sutcliffe left Fawcett and Wainsgate to attend Bristol, he had to walk 200 miles by foot. And so Fawcett and others from the surrounding Baptist churches formed the Northern Education Society in 1804. Their goal was to raise up a seminary. A gift of £500 had been given by a wealthy local manufacturer to the cause, but they had trouble finding someone willing to head it up. Joseph Kinghorn, Joseph Webb, and Robert Hall were all urged to take the lead, but declined. The work would be to pastor the Baptist Church at Bradford and to teach men who were recommended by their churches as suitable candidates for the pastoral office. Finally, someone suggested William Stedman. Now, William was happy in his church and not looking to leave. So when confronted with this possibility, he initially refused. But as he began to hear from other men like Isaiah Burt and John Ryland and many others, he reconsidered. He did have a growing desire to train men for the churches. So he agreed to visit Bradford and learn about the situation. All went well, and he accepted the call. Though his home church was saddened, they didn't stand in his way, and as he put it, quote, "no unkind things were uttered." And so after 6 years in Plymouth, he was headed over 300 miles north into the most important part of his life's work. Now, when he got there, he was to find, quote, "most of the ministers were illiterate, their talents small, their manner dull, their systems of divinity contracted, and their exertions scarcely any at all." By God's grace, this was about to begin to change, as we will learn next time. Thank you for listening today. This is Ron the Baptist wishing you grace and peace.
Thank you.